Farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, and regularly vegan, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner, 7 nights a week, with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Located at 2359 The Esplanade, or visit farmstarpizza.com, or like them on Facebook. Non-Human Radio is also made possible by White Glove Chimney Sweeps House of Fire on Thorntree Drive in Chico. For millennia, humans have gathered around fire. It's in our DNA. White Glove Chimney provides a warm, safe, and inviting hearth in your home. The Lopi, FPX, and Avalon hearth products create a beautiful and heartwarming gathering place. White Glove is located at 3128 Thorntree Drive in Chico, or visit them at whitegovechimney.com. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today, we're going to talk first about a project that looks at ways to produce enough protein to sustain 9 billion, billion, billion future humans. Next, we'll learn how the fashion world is dropping fur like a hot potato. And finally, we'll talk about an experiment that shines a tiny flashlight into the gloom of consumer ignorance about food choices. Hint, the choices aren't as sustainable as you might wish. We'll wrap up with the vegan calendar of events. Jeannie, take it away.
Veg News reports on the Global Coalition Protein Challenge 2040, which plans to tackle the inefficiency of animal agriculture through various protein-producing and climate-saving initiatives. The nonprofit sustainability consulting firm called Forum of the Future recently created the Protein 2040 Challenge. The initiative aims to develop solutions to feeding the growing global population, which is estimated to reach more than 9 billion people by 2050. The current population is about 7 billion. The think tank operates by encouraging collaboration between key businesses and NGOs in the animal, plant, and alternative protein sectors. Alternative protein here means lab-grown meat as opposed to plant-based protein. In its summary report, Forum of the Future acknowledges that animal sources of protein are destructive to the environment, which we knew and our listeners should know already, and it urges coalition members to focus on developing plant-based protein to address sustainability challenges. The report stated that, quote, in the West, we consume far too much animal protein, and demand is also growing exponentially in developing countries such as in China and India. The Protein 2040 Challenge lays out specific goals for achieving a better food system in the coming years. So it takes a more systemic look at food production, namely by increasing the consumption of plant-based protein, reducing food waste, closing the protein-nutrient gap between the over-consuming countries in the West versus developing regions, and developing indigenous plants as protein sources, amongst other ideas. So an idea, an example of an indigenous plant as a protein source would be something like quinoa. While the initiative is not solely focused on innovation within the plant-based protein sector, it is a comprehensive plan to move away from global reliance on animal agriculture for protein. The current coalition members include meat alternative company Quorn, Q-U-O-R-N, which isn't really big in the States. It's really big in Britain. It's a mushroom fungal-based protein.
I think it started out there too, right?
Yeah. And they are frustrating for vegans because most of their line has egg whites in it, presumably to boost the protein content as well as do some binding.
I think they started phasing it out, but they sort of lost our group of the demographic.
Well, I think that they, you're right. They have a couple of items that are vegan. And I have read that Quorn intends to go all vegan, but the timeline that I heard was like in the next year, mm-hmm. and they certainly haven't achieved that. I look at their labels, and they're all have egg white in them. Anyway, this group also, the coalition also includes Hershey's, which is a giant confectionery corporation, and the giant retailer Target. So, you know, this is an interesting think tank proposition, right. But it doesn't work to change the current system, the current big economic system, global economic system that we have, which is probably not very changeable by any individual choice. So, it's good to see this happening. It's good to see that at least one part of the puzzle is like plant-based protein.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like a pretty legitimate organization. I hadn't heard of it, and I did some research, and they have a lot of money coming in and a lot of money going out, and they're not just sitting on the money, and they do have quite a few connections so with industry. And obviously there's these, I'd like to drill deeper into why Hershey's cares about this. That must be some subsidiary of them, or perhaps they want to sell more protein bars.
Yeah, maybe they do. Maybe they want to add protein into their.
Maybe they're going back
bars.
To their roots, right? I mean, Hershey's was founded to help soldiers survive because it was a portable calorie source that was tasty.
And you know, and this group, the Forum for the Future think tank, it was founded in 1996. It's been around for a while.
Yeah.
It clearly addresses corporate America, corporate Britain, corporate India and China.
Yeah, I mean, I think currently, corporations and the military-industrial complex and Russian oligarchs rule the world. So we have to work with at least these big companies. Interesting.
So yeah, one of their I'm kind of hopeful for them too, because one of their successful projects was they created a sustainable cities index.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking at sustainability in a lot of different sectors. And one of the things that did was they looked at cities and did an analysis and developed a framework that you could plug any city into to calculate like a sustainability index. So,
yeah.
There's only so much change you can push onto a corporation. So
right.
This is the kind of think tank where corporations are opting in.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see it.
It's a step. Yeah.
Yeah. Over to you.
Yeah. Our next story is kind of a nice make it work moment. It's about a top fashion school, Parsons School of Design in New York City. They have cut ties with fur companies.
Yay.
All right. We had the same word there. That wasn't scripted. Spontaneous yays. Opting instead to focus on efforts on teaching students to work with alternatives to animal products. The school ended a nearly 15-year partnership with Finland-based Saga Furs, through which it had promoted career opportunities and, fur industry information and propaganda. The school is also no longer continuing sponsorships with other fur companies and will no longer offer any incentives for students to use fur in their designs.
Right, so this is interesting, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, this, the fashion industry that we have, the food industry we have, a lot of this is shaped at the college level.
Right. I mean, if the designers and their teachers aren't doing it, it will fade out. Often, as fur comes and goes and you see it kind of come back, it's still the same old big name designers who get older and older who trot it back out and are just like, whatever.
Yeah. And then we had Toby Benedetto from the Good Food Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I really like about what GFI is doing is they're seeking to engage projects at the undergraduate level, which means that, maybe in 6 or 8 years we'll see PhDs coming out of these undergrads and heading up departments at colleges and universities all over.
Yeah, I mean, some of these things to you and I, it's just unthinkable you would even think about using fur. Some of these things have faded so far from what's sort of, even amongst the general populace, typically accepted, but they sort of continue for sort of the various wealthy or status-seeking people. So, yeah, so this is cool. So the shift towards this cruelty-free perspective on fashion was due to the guidance of the school's dean of fashion, Mr. Burak Kaçmak, who became dean of the fashion department in 2015. So some leadership change and some positive change is coming. He has a background in sustainable environmental practices through positions at Gucci, Yves Saint Laurent?
Yves Saint Laurent.
Yeah.
I am not a fashion person, but I took French in high school. So
I've never had to speak that word. Stella McCartney, which I can say, and other so-called luxury brands. Kaçmak told Yahoo Style that, as a leader in design education, Parsons School of Design is proud to teach our students alternative methods to using animal products. Sustainability is a core component of our curriculum. We are teaching the future leaders of the fashion industry that they can have a positive impact on the environment by not using animal products and still create beautiful designs.
Hooray!
Which is kind of what we taught, what we discussed a little bit. So as far as proactive efforts goes, Parsons is also hosting a series of joint events with PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, the first of which was a panel discussion in February. That panel featured designer Todd Oldham on the topic of vegan and sustainable design. Oldham is a prolific designer, having started as a fashion designer under Ralph Lauren and other big fashion houses, and now does a lot of kind of varied projects for big clients such as Target or Target, as we say.
Yes, okay.
So I can do some French, right? Oldham addressed the issue of cruelty-free fashion at a retrospective at the Rhode Island School of Design last year, where
which is a very she design school. RISD is, if you're a
RISD.
If you're a designer, that's like the creme de la creme of.
Yeah, I mean it's not a big island to even fit a design school on it, so it must be important.
Anyway, carry on.
So Oldham was quoted at the RISD Rhode Island School of Design as saying, "Whenever you see a chinchilla coat, you're watching a bloodbath, as there can be anywhere from 80 to 200 chinchillas involved in a coat."
That's just disgusting.
So Oldham is just one of the many designers who have pledged to create compassionate designs. Giorgio Armani, Ralph Lauren, Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein, and Vivienne Westwood have all agreed to go for free. Parsons itself seems to be a neat place. Joshua Catcher, who is an adjunct professor of fashion at Parsons, is also the founder of Brave Gentleman, a vegan high-end men's clothing label. In a talk Catcher gave at Parsons, he talked about the cognitive dissonance in the advertising and fashion business, sharing a presentation about ad campaigns from major luxury fashion houses, including those owned by Moët Hennessy and Louis Vuitton, where models are sporting clothing made from animal products while holding adorable pets. Yeah, that's the definition of cognitive dissonance. "Why is there this disconnect between animals we wear and animals we have as pets?" Catcher asked.
Indeed, yeah. Right? That is the question.
I mean, and especially if it's like fox or something, if you had a pet fox, you'd be like, "I love this little guy," you know? And so if people don't know, you can always Google cognitive dissonance. It's a good term to understand. I myself have checked out the Brave Gentleman website. Some may call me a brave gentleman sometimes.
You are both brave and a gentleman, Mr. Toms.
A scholar and a sleepy person. So if you ever do need a fancy vegan tuxedo or kind of a chic tweed blazer, they've got all kinds of cool stuff. It's a little bit spendy, but for that type of clothing, I don't think it's any more expensive than anything you get at any other high-end fashion store. Yeah. So
before we go on to the next article, I do want to talk about the Stella McCartney fashion house, right? Mm-hmm. Stella McCartney is the daughter of Paul McCartney. She was raised vegetarian, and her passion is fashion. And she started designing in 2001. She's not mentioned in this particular story, but I just want to talk about her as sort of the epitome of designers, right? She not only does she not use fur in her designs, she doesn't use any leather. All her, like, she has a shoe line that's vegan, non-leather, and she does everything from ready-to-wear, menswear, as well as fragrance and kids lines, right?
Cool.
And she had a great quote on her website, which I hadn't really encountered before. And her mission is to be the world's first and only vegetarian luxury brand. We do not think that any animal should give their life for the sake of fashion. Hallelujah, right?
Mm-hmm.
We do not use and have never used leather, skins, feather, or fur in any of our products, collaborations, or licensed products. Right? So collaborations. I like that, right? So she can spin off and affect other designers.
Right. Kind of no excuses. Oh, well, this time we had it because we partnered with that guy and they had it made out of cow brains or something.
And this is a decision that we stand behind both ethically and environmentally.
Oh.
If only we could all make that decision.
Go Stella.
Yeah, good job.
All right, Jeannie.
Yeah, so our last story, we're going to wrap up. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio with Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms here on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. And now we'll wrap up with something completely different. I went ahead and browsed around in some research journals, and I found a study published last year in a peer-reviewed journal titled Journal of Cleaner Production, where researchers from the Zurich Institute for Environmental Decisions investigated how consumers perceive the climate impact of various food products and what criteria they use to estimate their impact. So we know that at least some consumers are seeking to make changes in their diets by selecting foods that are more sustainable and that have fewer harmful effects on the environment. However, we also know that many consumers lack sufficient knowledge about the climate impact of different foods and base their buying decisions on limited, biased, or even irrelevant criteria. And that's what these researchers were examining. What are the criteria? What is the outcome in terms of decisions?
I know I buy wine if I like the picture on the bottle.
Exactly, right? And that's irrelevant to the quality of the wine inside.
Oh, okay.
So they did a series of experiments. In the first one, participants rated the impact of one of six meat products. So we're just looking at meat.
By meat, we mean cut up dead animals.
Exactly. One set of choices were the organic versions of chicken, pork, and beef, and compared to conventionally produced chicken, pork, and beef. And in this experiment, they reported that the participants themselves reported that organic meat has a smaller climate impact than conventional meat, and that beef and pork have a significantly larger climate impact than chicken does. They noted that the participants revealed themselves to be unaware that beef products, organic or conventional, actually have significantly higher impacts than pork. And they also underestimated that the climate impact of organic meat, because organic products are not necessarily more environmentally friendly than conventional ones. So that the organic versus conventional has some meaning, but it doesn't have as much meaning as they hope it will in terms of climate impact.
Yeah, it's marketing terms.
Yeah, and a lot of people underestimate the impact, environmental impact of beef products, which is also the same as the environmental impact of dairy products, because cows themselves are ruminants, and in the course of their biology, of their digestive biology, they produce a lot of greenhouse gases. They produce a lot of methane.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, to me, cattle are so large, I wouldn't think that, but I'm obviously part of the choir here.
So in a second impact, in a second experiment, participants rated the impact of chicken, pork, and beef originated from Switzerland, Great Britain, and Brazil. And here I'll mention that all the respondents were based in Switzerland. This was a Swiss research institute. And results from this experiment showed that the farther the product had traveled, the higher its climate impact was rated. Participants believe that meat products from Brazil had the highest impact, followed by meat products from Great Britain, relative to being in Switzerland. Additionally, the authors found that the country of origin had a larger impact on ratings than the type of meat. So all products from Brazil were rated higher in terms of environmental impact than all products from Great Britain, and all of those were rated higher in impact than the products from Switzerland. So
they're just sort of thinking it came farther.
So it must be worse.
Yeah.
Right? So they're saying that chicken from Brazil is worse than beef from Switzerland, which is not the case.
So they're thinking about, you know, fuel costs for a boat, but not, that's sort of the noise in the equation of the overall life cycle of the products to grow those animals and what they produce during their lifetime.
And then in a third experiment, participants compared the climate impact for protein-rich products such as beef, chicken, hard cheese, tofu, eggs, and lentils. So finally we get to the plant protein part of it. Beef was perceived to have a significantly higher climate impact than all of the other products, which is accurate. And given its implications for animal suffering, the authors also noted that participants underestimated the climate impact of both chicken and hard cheese, right? So this is, again, they're not realizing that hard cheese is basically equivalent to beef.
Right. I think they're looking at the bigger the animal or something. Is there any difference with, soft cheese or yogurt or milk? I mean, what is hard versus...
I would imagine that they're just looking at the protein content of, like, a weight of hard cheese is greater than the protein content of, say, yogurt.
Got it. Yeah, it's based on
that. That's why they're just basing it on hard cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then finally, the authors concluded that their results indicated that participants were generally unable to rank food products based on their climate impact. I'm sorry. Participants were generally able to rank food products based on their climate impact, but failed to correctly identify the relative impacts of the respective products. So they identified some clear consumer misconceptions, including participants underestimating the climate impact of beef and hard cheese, as well as organic versus local products, and overestimated the impact of the country of origin. So they are basing their perceptions of the impact of these foods on directly visible factors, such as transportation distance, instead of lesser-known information, such as greenhouse heating costs for out-of-season products or the methane-producing effects of cattle.
Right. I mean, you know, nobody really sees the factory farm. They don't see the slaughterhouse. They don't see the manure piles. So they just don't know. This also reminds me back to the show and that labeling effort. If we could get, you know, environmental impact labels or sustainability labels, I forget what
it was, the endangered species label, I believe. Yeah, label. So it was like, you know, eat this package of meat and you will have an impact on, a jaguar in South America. So or I don't know whether you could probably do a similar label for like products that have palm oil in them, right?
Right.
Have this Girl Scout cookie with palm oil in it, and you hurt an orangutan in Borneo, right?
But the Girl Scouts.
I know, but the Girl Scouts. Actually, speaking of Girl Scouts, so in the Girl Scout cookie season time, and I know I've mentioned it like last year around this time. There are a few vegan flavors of Girl Scout cookies, like Thin Mints. But in a quirk of, I'm just going off on a tangent here.
Sure.
Right now. In a quirk of corporate baking production, there are two bakers for the whole United States that are contracted to make all the Girl Scout cookies. And the ones that supply the Butte County, the Chico area Girl Scouts, there's only one or two vegan flavors. Whereas if you go a little further south, like Sacramento, you get like five vegan flavors, including like the shortbread, the peanut butter cookies, and a couple of others that are vegan. So you have to get a supplier who has a friend who has a kid who's selling Girl Scout cookies in Sacramento.
Such a strange business. Usually, you know, the main goal of a business like that is the product is exactly the same wherever you get it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But the recipes are not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what else was it? They are. They're good. I enjoy them. I'm not healthy all the time. I try to be as healthy as I can. So anyway, so that's the end result of this research is that if you're an advocate seeking to educate people on the climate impact of various types of foods, it behooves you to like pay attention to possible consumer knowledge gaps, right? Know your biology. You know, be aware of the biology of cattle and how that is a potent greenhouse gas releaser. And so don't be so quick to think that grass-fed, that steak from a grass-fed cow or that glass of milk is not significantly damaging to the environment.
Definitely.
So, All right. So, if you just tuned in, you've been listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio.
All right, and now it is time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Get out your calendars, get out your iPhones and your Androids, get your Sharpie, write it on your palm. What's coming up, Jeannie?
First, we have the this Saturday, March 11th, the Conscious Eating Conference at the David Brower Center in Berkeley. I only mention it because it is a low-cost conference, and it's got a high-value lineup of speakers, including Carol Adams, who's the author of The Sexual Politics of Meat. This is the sixth annual Conscious Eating Conference, and it will explore the ethics of food and the effect of agriculture on animals and the planet, featuring the topic of how does religion help or hinder animal liberation. So it's interesting because Carol Adams is known as your feminist animal rights philosopher, but at this conference, she'll be speaking on Christianity and animal rights.
Right. Who wrote Dominion, that book about
that
this?
That was Matthew Scully, the conservative speechwriter.
Yeah, which is also about do we have dominion over animals or not? That sounds really cool. I'd also not recommend unconscious eating. It doesn't end well.
How about sleep eating? So anyway, registration is free for students, signing up for the conference includes a vegan breakfast and a vegan small like buffet lunch. So if you're interested, go to the United Poultry Concerns website at upc-online.org. And you can find the information on the Conscious Eating Conference. Saturday, March 18th, next Saturday, is the Meet Out at Animal Place from 11:30 to 3:30. Animal Place is in Grass Valley, and they invite you to join them for the Meet Out celebration to enjoy samples of catered and prepackaged vegan hot dogs, cheese, cookies, and beverages. And your barns will be open, and you can meet and learn about the animals there. And you can register for this event at animalplace.org. And then coming up, we have some activism on the Chico State campus on Monday and Tuesday, March 20th and 21st, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Between Glen and Siskiyou Hall, the walkway there. We have Brave the Cage. Chico for Animal Rights and Animal Place will be holding the Brave the Cage event from 10 to 3 p.m. The mission is to educate the public about what life is like for 95% of hens raised for eggs. Participants are invited to brave the cage and experience confinement in a human-sized aluminum battery cage.
I'd encourage people to check this out. I mean, it's pretty eye-opening when you really see what's going on and compare that to your desire to have scrambled eggs for breakfast every day, like it's 1945.
Yeah. So you can check out the Chico for Animal Rights Facebook page has the event listing. Animal Place has got its calendar of events related to Brave the Cage. And also I encourage folks to go back into our archives on March 23rd, 2016. We had Stephanie Bain, who was the coordinator last year, in studio for a great interview. Coming up towards the end of the month, March 23rd, we have the Plant-Based Chico event at the Chico Grange Hall from 6 to 9 p.m. And that's at the Chico Grange at 2775 Nord Avenue off of West East Avenue. They'll be meeting with special guest and local author and vegan educator Lonnie Muehlrath, who's the author of the book The Plant-Based Journey, which is about transitioning from a standard American diet to a plant-based vegan diet.
I haven't read the book, but I have heard a lot of good things about it.
It definitely takes a stepwise approach. It's like phased, so it's not like cold tofurkey. It's a lot of thinking and preparing before you make the decision, and arming you with techniques and recipes and just basic mental tools to navigate that change, because it is a change. And I want to give a shout out to the Plant-Based Chico Facebook group. If you are interested in that kind of transition, they have a lot of information and recipes. And then we'll follow that up with Saturday, March 25th. The Chico Vegan Potluck is from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Chico Library Community Room at 1108 Sherman Avenue. We will be celebrating pie. Pizza pie, apple pie, shepherd's pie, pot pie, and so on. And the Plant-Based Chico group that I mentioned will also have a special table for their Whole Foods plant-based goodies. And the rest of the tables will be a no-holds-barred, healthy to unhealthy spectrum of vegan food.
Show up on time. I plan on bringing only 3.14 cookies.
There you go. So you can find potluck details and the schedule for the whole year at chicovegan.com. And so, all right. Oh, we have one last bit of business to take care of. And that's the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Go for it, Danny.
The Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from the award-winning author of The Color Purple, not Oprah, Alice Walker. Quote, "The animals of the world exist for their own reasons. They were not made for humans any more than black people were made for white or women created for men."
And that's a shout-out.